News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Years ago, our guest today was being labeled America's worst mom. Her crime? Lenore Scanese let her 9-year-old ride the New York subway alone. Scanese is an author and mother of two. When her son Izzy said he wanted to take the train solo, she felt nervous, but also that he was ready. And sure enough, an hour later, Izzy returned, safe and sound, feeling quite proud of himself. Scanese then wrote a column about this for the New York Sun and thought that was the end of it. But instead, it was just the beginning. Producers at the Today Show saw her story and invited her on, where her decision was sharply questioned. Then MSNBC called, Fox News, Nightline, NPR, even reporters from China, Israel, and Australia. Much of the commentary was critical, but Scanese stuck to her guns and started a blog called FreeRangeKids.com. Her view, if you want your kids to become capable adults, you have to let go of the handlebars. Also, despite all the scary stories about child abductions, the truth is the world is just as safe today as it's always been for kids to roam. Scanese's blog became a best-selling book, and she became a national celebrity, a champion for this idea of free-range kids. Today in The Exchange, Lenore Scanese is with us, and you can join us now with your questions and comments. Did you have a free-range childhood? How does that compare to how kids are raised today? Do you consider yourself a free-range parent? Why or why not? How far do you think it is safe to let kids roam? And where do you yourself draw the line? Give us a call, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post your comments on our Facebook page. And Lenore Scanese will be in New Hampshire next Thursday, so for more information on that, go to our website, nhpr.org. She joins us now from New York. Hi, Lenore. Thanks for being here.
I'm so happy to be talking to you guys. Thank you.
Well, Lenore, I know it's cliche to say, when I was a kid, we did
Go
this.
Go right ahead. Everybody does. Let me ask.
Right. But just remind us how much parenting has changed, Lenore, in terms of what we were allowed to do and what kids today are not allowed to do.
Oh, my. I mean, percentage-wise, and nobody really cares about percents, but the majority of parents today walk to school, and today it's 11%. You know, it's like 1 in 10 kids walk to school. And when you come to school, even the word has changed, because it used to be that it was arrival and dismissal, right? Right?
Yeah.
Am I right? Yeah. Well, now it's drop off and pick up.
Ah, right? I mean,
without
I see the change,
even realizing it, we've put the parents or the caregiver into the role of always depositing the child and then always picking them up, because at this point, excuse me, in American culture, and actually a lot of cultures around the world, we don't believe our children are safe unless we literally have our eyes on them, or maybe we have our eyes on them electronically with a cell phone or a GPS. There's so many GPS devices out there now to track your kids all the time, as if they are in constant danger. And the whole thing about free-range kids is that it's not that we don't want kids to be safe. I love safety. I believe in safety. I have, you know, helmets. My kids have helmets. They have the mouth guard things when they play games. They had car seats when they were little. But I just don't think the kids are in danger and need a security detail every time they leave the house. But that's what makes me radical, idea that I think kids could be okay outside.
And you say something, Lenore, that really hit home, I think. You say parents today spend 4 times more minutes or hours per day, 4 times more time supervising their kids. 4 times more. Doing what? What are we doing?
Well, first of all, there's that driving them to and from school, and then there's a lot of time waiting to pick them up from school, because if you're actually driving them, you get in a big, long line, and then you have to wait for them to be brought out to you by the security forces that are the gym teacher or whoever brings the kid out to the car, and then the next car comes up, and the next car comes up. So there's just basic transportation. Then when you get to some place, one guy wrote to my website and said, you know, there's no more dropping kids off. When he goes to brings his son to a swimming lesson, he actually is obligated to to stay through the swimming lesson. It's like, why? You know, if I didn't trust you guys, I wouldn't have you teaching my son swimming. There are lifeguards all around the pool. There's the instructor. It's okay, but they won't let him go. And the same thing happens at other programs. And think of all the even if you go to a birthday party now, you know, it used to be you drop your kids off at a birthday party, and now the parents are expected to stay. When I talk about overnights on my site, because overnights have become just everybody looks at them with terror, like this is the chance for somebody to be, you know, molested, abducted. It's really, we see things through this lens of fear, almost every activity for kids. So parents say, well, I would let my kid go on an overnight, but of course, first I'd have to go and meet the family. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm trying to think if my mom knew the families that I slept over with. You know, maybe she saw the parents once in a while, but kids had a separate life from their parents. And I don't think they have that now. They have a life that's very integrated and supervised by the parents.
And I definitely want to talk to you a lot this hour, Lenore, about how this shift happened, you know, the fear that's driving it. But two more things to get out first. You write about the short-term and long-term effects of kids who are constantly supervised. Just give us the short-term first, Lenore. What happens to kids who are just constantly being watched and not being allowed to just, you know, head out on their own?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that they're missing out on something that when you look back on your childhood, you loved, which was a chance to discover some things on your own or a chance to be by yourself. I spent a lot of time looking for four-leaf clovers as a kid. I can't imagine my mom. I mean, it's boring enough for me to look for four-leaf clovers. What if she had to sit there the whole time? We would have had to come inside. So kids are losing out on just the basic adventure and sort of discovery of childhood, not to mention the fun of having to come up with something to do on your own. You know, when your mom is there and she's willing to toss a ball to you the whole time or take you, you know, everywhere, it's different from you and your friend having to come up with something to do and then maybe making up your own game or building a little fort or having your secret place, you know, whether it's just down the street or whether it's in the forest. I mean, there's that cool part of childhood that's just been sort of sucked out in the name of safety. And the long-term consequences I actually don't like to dwell upon very much because I feel that that just makes parents even more nervous. I feel like parents are already worried that they're doing it wrong, you know, that there's one right way to parent, and now Lenore is saying, do it this way, and if I don't, you know, I'm like the one who doesn't want to be saying that because I think there's so many influences on kids that the idea that it's just parents who create the loser or the Harvard kid is one of the reasons that we do spend so much time hovering because we think that it's our report card, and if we do it right, you know, our kid will be great, and if we do it wrong, it's all our fault, and it just puts such an enormous burden on parents, like kids are this absolute lump of shapeless clay, and it is up to us to mold the, you know, the David or, you know, an ashtray.
Well, and here's the thing, though, the reason I ask about short-term, long-term, and you mentioned mm-hmm. all those short-term losses that kids don't have that we had.
Yeah.
Also, you know, more visible obesity, right? I mean, a lot
oh,
more
yeah,
kids
thanks.
Are overweight. Diabetes.
Right.
Something
God,
awesome. You also mentioned
yesterday, I read that, oh, sorry, I just have to tell you that kids as young as 6 are starting to exhibit heart disease.
Yeah, and diabetes that didn't exist before. It used to be called adult diabetes, and now
right,
it's...
Right, and now it's kid,
it affects kids.
Onset.
Something, too, that struck me, Lenore, reading your book, some American kids are actually getting rickets. Now, these are soft bones
when you
don't get enough vitamin D because you're not outside enough. So I was struck
Isn't that
by
incredible?
That.
Incredible.
And I appreciate that you're trying not to, you know, blame parents long term. But you do say in the book that college administrators these days call a lot of these now young adults, you know, 18,
right.
19, 20 year olds. They call them teacups because
right,
they're
right.
so fragile and they've been so managed that mm-hmm. when they get out into the real world, out of the china closet, in other words,
mm-hmm.
they break. I also
right.
heard from another author a couple years back who said the number one reason college students used to go see the campus psychologist, Carl Honoré,
used to be that kids went there up until 1995. The number one reason kids, young, you know, college students went to psychological counseling was because of relationship problems.
Right. Boyfriend-girlfriend breakup.
Girlfriend.
Now
right.
the number one reason they go is they don't know what to do without mom and dad.
It's anxiety. Yeah. Oh, here's a cool study. So this lady down, a professor at, I think it was the University of Maryland, had her students in some sociology class live without their technology for a day. They had to give up, you know, cell phones. Obviously, that meant they couldn't text. They couldn't go on their computer. And she wanted to see what the effect was on them. And part of it was really good. You know, they ended up going over to their friend's dorm room instead of just, you know, saying, meet me at the, you know, at the diner or whatever. But some of the kids said that they decided not, they were afraid to walk across campus because normally they would call their parents.
Wait, say that again? They didn't walk across?
Normally they would call their parents and talk to them while they were walking across campus at night. And that was, once again, this magical all-seeing eye that not only made the parents feel safe, okay, I'm talking to my kid, she's obviously getting to her dorm, but it made the kid feel safe because mom or dad was with them. So without being able to actually talk to their parents on their cell phone while they were walking across campus, they were afraid. But listen to this. And then some kids said that was a day they decided not to drive because one kid said, quote, if I run out of gas, I can't call my mom.
Wow, in college.
Yeah. In college. It's like, how does calling your mom get you gas is what I kept wondering. But somehow the idea was like, I'm not going to take responsibility for filling up the car. I'm going to just hang loose for a day because if I can't get my mom on the phone, how am I supposed to be able to get myself from point A to point B?
So these are some of the long-term effects of an overprotected childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Lenore, let me invite our listeners to join us. And again, our number here on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, our guest is Lenore Scanese, author of Free Range Kids, How to Raise Safe, Self-Reliant Children Without Going Nuts with Worry. She will be speaking in New Hampshire next week on October 4th. For more information, go to our website, nhpr.org. By the way, you say, Lenore, listen, you like safety, so you're not saying, I let my boys just out. I give them the basics, you know, don't talk to strangers, both ways when you cross the street.
I do give them the basics, but I would never tell them don't talk to strangers because I think that's actually really terrible advice for a couple of reasons. I tell them they can't go off with any strangers. They can't go off with anybody. But if, God forbid, anything bad ever is happening to your kid, you want them to run away from the van and go stand, next to the guy raking his leaves who's across the street and wait for the van to go by. Or you want them to run into a store and say, I'm going to stand here until this guy goes by. Or can I use your phone? Or pretend like you're talking to me. Because most people are good.
All right. And Lenore, I'm going to wrap you up there. Lots of calls coming up after a short break, so stay with us.
Good morning. It's 9:19, and more on Free Range Kids on the Exchange on NHPR than a 10 on the Diane Rehm Show. It's the domestic hour of the Friday News Roundup. NHPR is more than our daily broadcast. Check out our website to listen back to a story you might have missed or only caught a part of, or find more information or related stories about something that interests you. Subscribe to podcasts, learn about special events. There's always something more at nhpr.org. New Hampshire weather, cloudy today with some rain, highs 55 to 60 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Core Gastroenterology of Exeter, offering comprehensive care in the evaluation and treatment of gastrointestinal disorders, corephysicians.org, the art of wellness. And Vineyard Brands, importers of Mann wines from the coastal vineyards of South Africa, Mann Vintners, proudly supports the Susan B. Komen Race for the Cure, mannvintners.co.za. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, author Lenore Scanese on her book, Free Range Kids. For the last 2 years, she's been on a crusade to loosen the reins on American childhood. Scanese will be in New Hampshire next Thursday. For more information, go to our website, nhpr.org. You can join us now with your questions and thoughts on this topic. Did you yourself have a free range childhood? How does that compare to how kids are raised today? On the other side, do you think it's possible to go overboard with letting kids roam? Where do you decide to draw that line between too much freedom and not enough? Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Lenore, lots of people who want to jump in our conversation. But one more question for you before we go to our listeners. You write that much of this fear that parents have, is linked to scary, round-the-clock news coverage of child abductions. It feeds into our worst nightmare. It gets into our brains. And we're just not really good at assessing what the risk really is. How do most parents weigh the risks of their child being taken off by some stranger in a dark alley versus the reality of that happening?
Well, let me give you an analogy. What happens when we see all these scary stories, which can be like a rehash of like it was 30 years ago that Eitan Peitz was taken from and, you know, his walk to school, and then it'll be something new and it'll be a scare. And for 24/7, when you turn on TV, you can find a story of a child who was abducted. And if it's not the news and if it's not Nancy Grace, it'll be on Law and Order or CSI. So it starts to feel like the second your kid leaves the house, they are in grave danger of being kidnapped. But the number one way that kids die in America is as car passengers. And so what I'm always asking parents who are too afraid to let their kids walk outside or play on the front lawn or play at the park is, are you afraid to drive your kids somewhere? And generally the answer is, of course not. And I say, well, it's more dangerous than letting your kids go outside. But we don't go through the same paroxysms of fear and dread before we put them in the car. We don't say, oh, my God, something could happen. If I was hit by a Mack truck or a drunk driver, I would never forgive myself. It's just too terrible. I don't know what I would do if this happened. Let's just not get into the car. And so the point is that we dangerize some things in our society and we don't dangerize others. And for some reason, I think because the media harps on it, we have dangerized the idea of children outside in the world, and yet we give them driving a pass because we know that generally we have perspective on that. We understand that the odds are in our favor. We don't understand how the odds are also in our favor when we let them out.
Well, what about the lists, though, Lenore, that are now available of registered sex offenders? I've got a friend who found out a neighbor was on that list, and she's not really thrilled to let her kids roam now.
Well, I'm pretty sure that most of your listeners know that the vast majority of crimes against kids are not committed by strangers in the alley or lurking outside the playground. It's committed by people that they know very well, somebody in the family or a step-parent or you know, just somebody close to them. So once again, you tell kids that they can't go off with anybody, and I think you're going to be pretty safe. Those lists are really corrupted. I wish they did list the very scary, threatening people. But you can be on the sex offender list if you were a senior in high school and you had a freshman girlfriend, and you could be on the list forever. And you keep getting older, and it keeps listing your girlfriend as 14, and now you're 34, and you're still on the list 20 years later. And these lists don't really separate the actual threatening child molesters from the people who had sex in their teens. And I think that's a real problem with the list, and it makes it look like we're surrounded by danger when supposedly maybe 5% of the people on the sex offender lists, at least this is according to one study in Georgia, pose a real threat to children.
Here's one more question for you, and then I do want to go to our listeners. Drivers today, you said, you know, that, again, parents think it's not safe to let their kids out. I do find that many people driving today are texting while driving, chatting on cell phones. Fatalities involving pedestrians are up because drivers are more distracted. You know, I think my kids are pretty safe bikers in terms of following the rules, but I kind of worry about the drivers out there. I don't think they're paying attention.
Well, you happen to have hit on my big fear, which is drivers. I'm terrified of drivers. And all I can say is, actually, I think the numbers are down from when we were kids. Perhaps they've crept up again.
Mm-hmm.
And what you have to do what our parents did for us, which was teach your kids, you know, to cross the street safely. I still scream at my kids. They're now teenagers when I see them crossing the street and I don't think they're paying enough attention or they're drifting off the curb. And you have to teach them to, like we did in driver's ed, watch out for the other guy. There's of course, no way to make the world perfectly safe. And so the expression is, since you can't prepare the path for your child, you have to prepare your child for the path. And sometimes that's the bike path.
I see. Since you can't prepare the path for your child, you have to prepare your child for the path. In other words, give them the basics. Make sure the driver sees you before you cross the street.
And wear your helmet,
right.
You know, and wear reflective clothing. I mean, like I said, it's not that I am a danger, evil Knievel-esque mom. I'm a nervous mom. I just don't happen to be nervous about the very, very, very rare chance of something of the kidnapping, and I'm more concerned about, like you were talking about before, diabetes, obesity, depression from not having a life outside the four walls.
All right. Let's take some calls if we could. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email us if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. Again, our guest today is Lenore Scanese, once dubbed America's Worst Mom. Her book is called Free Range Kids, How to Raise Safe, Self-Reliant Children. And let's go first to Marilyn, who's calling from Hillsboro. Hi, Marilyn. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks, Laura. And good to hear from you, Lenore. I'm one of the people who's hosting Lenore at the Children in Nature Conference next Thursday in Wyndham. Hi. And Lenore, when you and I first spoke a few years ago, you were really surprised to hear, coming from New York City, you were surprised to hear we were having the same experience here in New Hampshire, that kids just were not playing outdoors anymore, whether it was a rural, a suburban, or an urban area. And we chose Southeast New Hampshire for our conference to focus on urban areas. So what I wanted to hear from you is, what would you tell parents about where kids can play outdoors in urban settings? You know, where would they find nearby nature, and how can you feel comfortable having them out and about in urban places?
Yeah,
outside.
Marilyn, thanks a lot for the call.
Two very different questions. Where can they find nature, which I think is everywhere, including, sprouting between the cracks of the sidewalk? But there's parks, there's playgrounds all around. I just went through a whole nother round of media castigation because I started a class 2 weeks ago called I Won't Supervise Your Kids that was in Central Park. And the whole idea was that kids would come and gather at one place in Central Park on Wednesday after school, and then they would meet each other, and they'd be different ages, and I would introduce them, I'd give them my cell phone number, and then I'd go off to drink coffee at Starbucks, and they had to pay a hefty sum, although scholarships were available for the asking. But the whole idea was, I know my son, my younger son, who's now 14, has an impossible time finding friends after school to play basketball with or to play football with. And what I really want to do is to suggest that parents who feel like this is something lacking in their children's lives find each other, reach out to each other, meet each other at PTA meetings, bring it up. And so come up with a day and a time when kids can stay after school and just play on their own. I mean, there's going to be a field there. There's going to be nature. There's going to be a ball. There's going to be clouds and birds overhead. There's nature, but there's also other kids, and that's nature. Playing is a natural thing, and we've sucked it out of our kids' lives and replaced it with Mandarin and, Kumon and tutoring up the wazoo. And play is as essential as anything else in nature, and we take it out at their peril. I mean, that's how kids learn to play grown-up roles, is by playing them. And so find like-minded parents and set aside maybe a time and a place where you all agree that your kids can gather and that you won't gather. Maybe you'll pick them up afterwards if they're very young. But let them play. That's the first way I would suggest for getting kids outside.
Well, Marilyn, thanks a lot for the call. And let's take another one. This is Johanna in Sutton. Hi, Johanna. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Oh, yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And I'm enjoying the program. Listen, I love my daughter to get out and enjoy the outdoors. And but the problem is that our infrastructure is not very conducive for her hopping on her bike and riding to the local general store. I mean, I would love her to ride her bike to school, but the roads are seriously very dangerous, and that's my biggest concern. So, I mean, it's frustrating as a parent because there's no bike path.
It's an infrastructure question. Yeah, go ahead.
Right.
What do you think, Lenore?
Infrastructure-wise, I'm no expert on that, I'm sorry to say, but I would definitely contact Safe Routes to Schools. It's a federal program, but there's chapters in every state, and their job is to come out and assess how kids could possibly get to school safely on their own by bike or by walking, and then to make it happen. So if you're interested in that, I would go online, find Safe Routes to Schools for New Hampshire, and call them up and say, look, there's no safe way for my kid to ride her bike, and it's time for her to do so. She wants to, and I'm game, so let's make it happen. And they can start working on, whether it's crosswalks or sidewalks or a crossing guard, and hopefully figure something out. One other thing that people do, because we are this society that doesn't just let kids walk, is there's this thing called a walking school bus, where you and your neighbors agree that, like, okay, one day it's going to be Laura, you're going to pick up my kid and your kid and then some other kids along the way, and you're walking them to school. So there is an adult with them, but it's not necessarily, you don't have to go by a real bus or by SUV. You're all walking to school in sort of like a human chain. And then the next day it's my turn to do it, and then the next day it's Fred's turn to do it. So the kids at least are outside and are learning their way, and gradually if you see them, you know, being kind of responsible about looking both ways and such, if you feel comfortable, you can start letting them do it on their own. So it's a way to gradually make it more normal to walk to school again.
Johanna, thanks for the call. And again, the number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in the Exchange, we're talking with the author of the book Free Range Kids, Lenore Scanese. We're talking about how American children, she says, are overprotected and just aren't developing the basic skills to get along once they hit the real world. Our number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Here's an email that just came in from John. Two things, Lenore. First, he says, could you restate the study where the college kids were deprived of their gadgets, the one where they didn't want to walk across campus without mom on the phone?
Oh, I got it. Google it for myself. Actually, why doesn't he Google? Google.
All right, John, you
and cell phones.
All right.
And college.
Here's his basic question, though, and it's a good one. John says, I wonder if you've ever heard of James Hillman, the psychologist, who labeled our society an airbag culture. It runs the full gamut. Safety features everywhere, avoiding risks, doing anything to avoid danger. Hillman says, we're terribly afraid. You mentioned cars. They are now perfecting the computerized car to protect us. John asks, does she think this is societal, far beyond just kids and parents?
I so believe that I keep wanting to write a second book called Safety Junkies, because I really feel like we've gotten to the point where nothing is safe enough. I get the alerts every day from the Consumer Product Safety Commission on what they've recalled. And my favorite recall was actually from, I think, a year ago, which was there was some kind of recliner that was recalled because it had a screw protruding from the bottom. And one person had their dog's hair get caught in it. So if that makes something unsafe, if that's considered a danger to the point where we have to recall the product, I don't think anything is safe enough. I mean, there are products that are recalled. Little Tykes recalled 1.5 million of their workbenches, the little, you know, little things.
You bang
with
the
hammer,
yeah.
you hammer, and you saw. And there's no real hammer, and there's no real saw, and there's no real nail. But a child did almost choke once on one of the nails, which is the size, it's a piece of plastic the size of a salt shaker. And they'd sold 1.5 million of them already, and they've sold them for 15 years, and suddenly one child almost chokes, thank God didn't choke to death, and it's considered an unsafe product. Well, if something that hasn't killed anybody in 15 years and 1.5 million of them is considered dangerous, nothing is safe enough. I think he's totally right that it is a society-wide problem. And we see it with, we're afraid of everything. We're afraid of our food. We're afraid of our teachers. There's background checks for every volunteer who wants to go to school in some schools now, who wants to help out in their kids' school now. Everybody is seen as a threat. Every possible thing you could eat, wear, or touch is considered toxic somehow. I really do think that it is a societally wide problem.
Well, and speaking of those background checks, and I've gone through them myself to do
Have
my
you?
Own volunteer activities, yes. But, you know, you do see, gosh, just recently here in Concord, there was articles about a guy who was a baseball coach, and turns out he was molesting some of the boys. So
That's horrible.
Is there anything really wrong with those background checks?
Yes, there is. There's two things that I would suggest. One is, first of all, Jerry Sandusky would have passed a background check. So I don't think they're necessarily screening out the people that you want to screen out. And secondly, you're right. Unfortunately, sometimes there are going to be horrible people who want to prey on our children. And since we won't necessarily know who they are, because they might look like somebody that we like or just seem totally normal, what you have to do is prepare your children. And that's actually what the Boy Scouts teach, this little thing that I'm just going to say really quickly on the air that I think is very helpful. They teach the three R's, which are recognize, resist, and report abuse. If you recognize that nobody's supposed to touch you where your safe, where your swimsuit covers, that's recognizing what abuse is. So, and you can teach kids as young as three, according to this guy I interviewed, actually up by you at the University of New Hampshire, David Finkelhor at the Crimes Against Children Research Center. So you teach them to recognize abuse, resist, because if you resist, a lot of people will stop because they don't want to be found out. And the last thing is to report, to tell your kids that there shouldn't be any secrets between them and any adults, and you won't be mad at them. You won't be mad at them if they come and tell you something. You know, you're not going to blame them. So you keep the lines of communication open for you, and that's the most you can do for your kids. That way you have given them the tools, and once again, you've sort of prepared them for the path, because you can't background check absolutely everybody in the world, and even if you background check them, you won't necessarily flag the bad ones. So recognize, resist, and report, the three R's, are going to really help your kid be safe.
Again, like you said at the beginning of the program, you can't prepare the path for your kids, so prepare the kid, him or herself. Let's take another call. This is Jim in Manchester. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning, ladies. Thank you.
Hi,
yeah, I just wanted to comment. When we're talking about infrastructure and how infrastructure affects the ability to do some of these things, you know, I live in Chester and on a street corner. I have four kids, and the family diagonally across the street have got kids. And our eight kids get together all the time and play in the street in the way that I did many years ago. And we have friends will drop some of their kids off because they know that our kids are playing on the street or they're playing in the park, which is a quarter mile down the street, and they just all head down there, 8 or 10 or 12 of them together, and they play some pickup football or something, and it works very well, but it's a throwback to a previous age. And my observation is that if you go to a modern suburban neighborhood, many of them have very large lots. Like you said earlier, the sidewalk is often missing, which is absolutely amazing to me that people can get planning permission to build a neighborhood with no sidewalks on it. It seems like a simple fix. And so people are forced to, you know, come out of the garage and the driveway and bring little Johnny and Mary, you know, down the half-mile drive and off to the ballet class or off to football or off to dance and bring them back later. And so there's a function form, you know, the design issue here that urban neighborhoods did do this very well for years, and there's an answer in there in that infrastructure side.
So the suburban areas, Jim, sometimes aren't as conducive to this kind of free range play. We will talk about his point after a short break, Lenore, and also take a lot more calls. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Emails are great, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, and we'll be back in 1 minute.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from Dartmouth Community Medical School Lecture, It's Personal, Medicine's Evolution, Away from One Size Fits All, beginning October 2nd in Manchester, online at Dartmouth Community Medical School. And the Art of the Americas Wing at the Museum of Fine Arts Boston, where America's treasures bring history to life. More at MFA.org. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
The legacy one leaves for a community can last for generations. I'm Anna Moskoff, Plan Gifts Officer at NHPR, and I'd like to talk to you about the many ways in which you can support NHPR, like leaving a gift through your estate. You can make a lasting impact on this new service for the next generation of public radio listeners in New Hampshire. For more information, please call 800-639-4131 or visit the support page at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Monday in The Exchange, be sure to join us as the candidates for New Hampshire governor debate the issue of health care. You can email us your questions before the program at exchange@nhpr.org. And again, be sure to join us for this special broadcast Monday morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're discussing the book and the movement known as Free Range Kids with author and blogger Lenore Scanese. You can join us 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page. And Lenore, before we go back to our listeners, just a real quick thought from you on Jim's comments. He said, look, I live in Manchester. I live in the city. It's actually pretty easy for kids to get together and play. Whereas in the suburbs, everything's so spread out. There's no sidewalks. It's a lot harder to be free range.
I sort of agree because I'm bringing up my kids in the city. But on the other hand, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, and the difference is that even though the houses were further apart, we were outside. It comes down to one of the other things you mentioned, which is all the kids being driven to their classes. Well, if we do set aside some time for our kids to have free time, and if we kick them out, you know, you have to kick them off their computers. You have to kick mine off their computers. I think, you know, what you need to get kids outside is other kids outside. And if you're in a neighborhood and you want to start that, I've really heard from parents who have let their kids walk to school, like, you know, two sisters, and then another parent will say, oh, well, you know, do you mind if my kid walks with yours? And then pretty soon there's a gaggle of kids. So it really is breaking the ice. Right now the kids aren't outside, but if you start sending some outside, more will come.
All right, let's take another call. This is Deborah waiting in Hopkinton. Hey, Deborah, thanks for hanging on. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, it's a great topic, and I hope it really is a movement. I have three children. I grew up as a free-range kid, no parental supervision. It was great, and I can't imagine my kids doing what we did. But my daughter, who's 18 now, when she was about eight, a friend of mine from France said, can I take her with me? I'm going to go home for a couple weeks, and my parents can bring her back. So I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, people are going to think I'm a horrible mother. But I talked myself into it. I let my eight-year-old go. She went for a month and a half, and I thought I would get a call that she was homesick, that we would need to go get her. We never got a call. She had a wonderful time. Nobody spoke English, and my daughter does not speak French. And she was enrolled in the local school. She went there for a month and a half. My friend, her parents brought my daughter back safely, you know, after a month and a half. And I just feel so glad that I was able to let go and let her have something that she will remember forever. And now my youngest is nine, and they're asking for the same thing. And I'm not sure I can do it, but I feel like I need to. You know, it was so wonderful.
Wow. Well, good for you, Deborah. You let your eight-year-old go to France.
Yeah, so that was, I can understand, I love my children, and I don't ever want anything to happen to them that would be bad, but at the same time, I want good things to happen. And I do have those blunt conversations that parents need to have, which is, watch out for the bad guys. Being a free-range kid myself, I had a lot of encounters, and I was a very street-savvy kid, so I try to share that with my kids.
Well, Deborah, thanks a lot. And, you know, the last point she made, it's a great story. The last point she made is, you know, she was a street-savvy kid. You say in the book, Lenore, that actually the kid who is allowed to get out and roam around ends up being safer because he or she knows what to do in a bad situation.
Yeah, and has some of that their wits about them. And that was not me coming to that conclusion. I spoke to the head of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. That's Ernie Allen. They're the people who put the missing kids' pictures on the milk cartons and forgot to tell us that most of them were runaways or taken by non-custodial parents. But anyways, they are the people who are always saying, have you seen this child? And when I spoke to him, he said that stranger danger is a myth that they are trying to explode. That's not the big problem. And that the safest kids are the confident kids, and the confident kids are those who have done some stuff on their own and been out there, interacted with people. It's, you know, if you never have, here's an example. This grandma was at IKEA, and she saw a little girl, like 4 years old, holding her daddy's hand, and she waved at the little girl, like, hi there, hi there. And the kid turned to her dad and said, Daddy, that lady waved at me. Is she going to kidnap me?
Wow.
that's sort of the absence of street smarts. Of course, she's four. But the idea is that if you're going to overreact to everybody, you're not going to have any sense of when real danger lurks.
Let's take another call. Thanks for that one, Deborah. And this is Nicole in Manchester. Hi, Nicole. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. You know, great show so far. Thank you so much. And, you know, I grew up in the country, and I definitely had free reign. But my concern is more about letting my own child hang out with some of these children because I don't necessarily approve about how they're being parented. I feel like a lot of these children have no manners. They're huge bullies. They swear a lot, like even at a very young age. So I'm more concerned about the other children she may be hanging out with and not necessarily the environment.
Wow. Okay, I'm not quite sure if this is on target with you and what you're talking
yeah,
about, but
think what I would possibly say, except
well,
that maybe bring them over to your house.
I mean, I guess, Lenore, if you let your kid be totally free range, Nicole says she's not so thrilled with the people her kids have hooked up with.
Yeah, I'm flummoxed about that because generally kids are kind of nice, and maybe you could, you know, get her into Girl Scouts or something where there's a group of kids that you like, and then she could start doing stuff with them. I'm sorry that she's in an environment where everybody, it seems odd that everybody would be really bad. Maybe she can meet some other kids through some other program or just going to the park.
Okay. Well, Nicole, good luck to you. I don't think we helped you out, but thank you for calling in.
Sorry.
And let's go to Plymouth next. Josh is on the air. Hi, Josh.
Hey, hey. Yeah, I have three kids, and I think this is a great conversation today. I just wanted to make a comment going back. I know you were talking about a little while ago about product recalls and you know, background checks and parents always hanging out, you know, at swim lessons and things. Mm-hmm. And what I hear a lot is that it's kind of a set of rules that they have to follow, you know, that have been put in, you know, from just insurance rules or just frivolous lawsuits. And I feel like it's almost like sometimes their hands are tied and they don't really want to be that way. But
I'm so in agreement because there's so many things. Like I just heard from yet another mom. I have to read her post and put it on my blog about a school where a kid tripped while running. And so there's no more running. There's no more running.
Wait. No more running?
No more running.
Not even on the playground?
Oh, my God, I got to get it on the blog today. I haven't even read it. Yeah, she said that the school had outlawed running. There's schools that have outlawed tag. There are playgrounds that have no more merry-go-rounds and no more seesaws or teeter-totters or whatever you want to call them. The slides have shrunk to the size of grasshoppers. And it is, as this guy says, often in response to the demands of the insurance company. And really, I have not figured out how to fight that other than to beg the park district or the school to say to their insurer, these are ridiculous precautions you're making us take. Because, gosh, there was a study done of preschools, and preschools are under so many edicts for, like, they have to have this much space around the swing set, and the mulch has to be 8 inches deep in case a kid falls off, and everything has to be really small and really soft, and to the point where kids are not playing outside anymore because the playgrounds are so dumbed down for insurance reasons. They found that kids were playing vigorously, quote-unquote vigorously, for 2-3% of the day, and we're talking about kids ages 3 to 5. So if you're talking, even little kids are not encouraged to run and play and climb because, God forbid, they fall, which we've all been doing since the beginning of time. He's right. We have to fight back these insurance regulations that are constricting us. And the only people who can really fight back are the people who are buying the insurance, which are the school districts and the park districts.
Although insurers are reacting, and correct me if I'm wrong, Lenore, they're reacting to our lawsuit-happy society, to parents themselves saying, you know, Johnny broke his arm because of that bad playground equipment.
It's
a circle.
It is a circle, although I do feel that the one link that seems a little more urban mythy to me is the idea that all parents are suing all the time. You know, insurance companies lose nothing by making outrageous demands of, like, take down the slide, take down the merry-go-round, and no more running. Because what do they care if you run or not? I mean, they could just say anything, and they could have kids play statues for all of recess, and their risk would be, instead of being 0.0001% that somebody's going to sue, would be 0.00001. So for them, there's no downside. But there is a big downside for the school to cave to these demands, and it's up to the school, I think, and the park district to say, look, we're not being sued right and left. That's, you know, I know that's the fear, but let's let kids live. And I do think, yeah, the other part is for parents to realize that there's no such thing as a completely risk-free anything, including a completely risk-free childhood. And when you try to get that, you start recalling, you know, every possible item that children could touch or buy or chew, and you take out the playground equipment, and you keep the kids inside, and you don't let them run, and you don't let them walk to school, and you don't let them leave the house, and then you end up with all those other risks that just aren't on the front screen of our fear-based society, which is the diabetes and the obesity, you know, the depression of not having anything to remember from your childhood except Club Penguin.
Well, isn't there a case to be made, though, Lenore? Let's just take the other side, that equipment really isn't safe, and now we know that, so why not replace it? I mean, you mentioned, for example, helmets. Okay, back when I was a kid, nobody wore helmets.
Right, now
we know it's a better idea, so yes, we all wear them, or we make our kids wear them. So is it possible?
That's not something we've taken out. That's not something we've taken out of our children's lives. We let them still ride their bikes and just put a helmet on. But when you say you're not allowed to walk to the park, you're not allowed to be in the park, you're not allowed to play on the front lawn, then you've changed their life. And that's what I just don't understand. One of my main points that I make that I forgot to make here at all is that one of the reasons parents are so nervous about sending their kids outside, and they say, oh, we did it when we were kids, but times have changed. They truly believe that crime is higher now, and that children are in more danger than they were when we were kids, and our parents let us play outside. But actually, crime is lower today across the board against adults, against kids, than it was in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And it's very easy to go to the FBI website and look up the crime statistics for yourself, because it is hard for most people to believe it, and most people, when questioned, think that crime is going up. So I just want to get the message out there that, you know, we live in very safe times, and there are mostly very safe playgrounds, and the crime rate is down, and the water is pure, and famine does not stalk the land, and diphtheria is vanquished, as is polio, and so it's a great time for a kid to be a kid out on his bike at the playground, riding his, you know, going to his friend's house, making his own play date, you know, tossing a ball by himself or coming up with a game with a friend. And I mean this for girls, too. And I feel like we're almost committing the sin of ingratitude when we keep our kids inside saying, no, it's not safe enough. It's never been safer. Rejoice.
Let's take one more call if we could. And Brittany's waiting in Sandown. Hi, Brittany. Thanks for hanging on the line. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I kind of wanted to talk about the long-term effects that we mentioned earlier in the show. I'm currently a college student, a senior at UNH, and I definitely am I witnessed the long-term effects of this sort of, you know, teacup syndrome, or if you will, you know, people who my peers, you know, 21-year-olds, who can drink, and, you know, people who can gamble. Like, we're legally adults at this point, and they don't know how to turn on a washing machine, or they don't know how to make their own dinner. You know, they'll order pizza for their apartment, you know, 10 nights a week that mommy and daddy pay for, because they don't know how to, like, make mac and cheese out of a box. And it's just sort of sad to think that, you know, college used to be an institution where they were preparing you to be a citizen, you know, a functioning member of society, and you were supposed to get all these amazing skills and all this independence and autonomy, and yet, you know, like you said, like, people can't walk across campus without talking to their parents. And I just think that's sort of sad, and I see it, and I get frustrated when, you know, I feel as though I've had a fairly free-range childhood myself. I walked to school. I walked to the corner store. You know, there used to be a video rental place back when VHS was, you know, in style.
You're older than you sound.
Thank you.
What do you think, Brittany? I want to ask you a quick question.
Sure.
What do you say to your friends when they don't know how to run the washing machine, or they, you know, seem like they've been a little too sheltered and don't know what to do? What do you say?
You know, it's hard because you don't want to offend anyone.
Sure.
There's definitely a delicate balance. But I'm more than pushing them to do things on their own. I'm like, you're really going to call your mom dad? But you know what I mean? Like, I try to encourage them to don't have contact for a week. You know what I mean? Like, just for 3 days even, just, you know, mellow out and see if you can manage cooking your own meals and doing your own laundry.
Right, think of it as a camp out.
Exactly. You know, like, this experience of living on campus is supposed to be, like, you know, life-changing and, like, a rite of passage into adulthood, and I see kids who go home every weekend, and it's just so sad.
Well, Brittany, thanks a lot for calling in. Good to hear from you.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
All right, bye-bye. You know, one last thing, and Brittany sort of touched on this, too. Mm-hmm. What about cell phones, Lenore? I mean, have they made us, you know, could we be more free-range because at least Johnny has the cell phone and he can call from the park?
No.
Or does it make us less free range because we're always in touch with Johnny and he never has his own adventures?
I think it does the latter a lot. And I think it does two things. One is that because we can be in touch with our children all the time now, we are. I know I am to a certain extent. And it used to be that by virtue of kids growing up, they grew apart from you. And so when they're 3 years old and they're underfoot and you're telling them, don't touch the stove, or no, it's not snack time, or just one cookie, you know, you were this overbearing person because you had to instill in them just the basics. But now, like when my son was 10, my older son was 10, and I left the house one morning early, and I got this frantic call, like I'd just been out of the house for like 10 minutes, like, what is it, Maury? And he said, Mom, what, can I have another slice of banana bread? And I thought, wow, you know, this isn't something that I should be talking about with him. You know, he's not asking for, you know, can I hit the vodka? He was asking for the homemade banana bread that I put out there for their breakfast. And so the idea was that somehow he hadn't learned that, like, at some point you make your own decisions. And it made me feel bad about the fact that he thought he had to call me, you know, that this was something that I should be regulating. So,
you,
yes,
the ultimate free-range mom.
Well, I wasn't free-range then.
Oh, okay.
I came to it later. But, yeah, no, it's, I think they do make us hover over our children more, and they also make us worry in a weird way, which is that if you can't get a hold of your kid, your mind goes to the worst place.
Yeah, something really must be wrong.
Right, right, right. Whereas it used to be like, okay, they're going to be like, oh, my God, he must have just stopped and forgotten what time it is he's playing basketball.
All right. Well, Lenore, it's been really fun talking to you. Thank you very much, and I hope you have a good trip,
Laura,
to New Hampshire next week.
I can't wait. Thanks so much.
That's Lenore Scanese, author of Free Range Kids, How to Raise Safe, Self-Reliant Children Without Going Nuts with Worry. Again, she'll be the keynote speaker at this year's New Hampshire Children in Nature Coalition on October 4th, so that's next Thursday in Windham. If you want more information on that event, you can go to our website, nhpr.org. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Next week on The Exchange, we begin with a forum on health care policy in the Granite State with candidates for governor, Republican Ovid Lamontagne and Democrat Maggie Hassan, on issues from the Affordable Care Act to mental health services. Later, your reaction to the first presidential debate. And we end the week with the new leader of the New Hampshire Catholic Church, Bishop Peter Labashi. Email us at nhpr.org and join us all next week for The Exchange, every morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
Diane.